walk until there's only one of you left. Who's ready to win?
All right, anybody need a fresh canteen or a fresh pack of food concentrates before we start?
Canteen, 57.
Canteen.
All right. So hopefully the audio works out here. Mowers will turn on. Airplanes will fly over because there's an air show south of us. So,
yeah.
All right. We'll crank it up here. Let's go. Yeah. Who's ready to win?
Who's got the sack, boys?
Yes. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And this time we are going to be talking about The Long Walk by Stephen King, written as Richard Bachman in 1979?
Published in 1979. Okay. He actually started writing it in 1966 while he was in college.
Interesting. Oh, wow. Okay. And there's a recent adaptation in theaters now. Who knows for how much longer? So strike while the iron is hot and go check out the movie if you can. We are sort of doing a socially distanced thing here because I'm playing the part of Scram from the book who gets sick. And I'm just coming off a cold that I evidently got on the flight back from the UK where James and I were doing a long walk. and so we're sitting in my backyard. You may hear
not
planes.
Not a long walk.
The long walk, yes. You may hear some planes fly over. Mowers may start up. Who knows? Dogs may bark. Birds may chirp. But, you know, this is an outdoorsy book.
Yes. And right? Other people might talk.
Well, hopefully. I don't know.
I mean, besides you.
That would be good. That would be good. Yeah.
Sometimes you're saying you feel like a straight man.
You're saying I'm talking too much to begin it. Okay, I hear you. I hear you. So, history with this title, Colin.
Unusually for a Stephen King book, I had not read this one yet.
You hadn't?
No. So I picked it up about a year ago and read it because I knew the adaptation was coming out, and you know, it gave me a little bit of time to read it and think about it. And
okay,
so, yeah,
okay.
Fairly recent.
Okay. And then you reread this one.
I did.
Is there just like the Bachman books where you're just hit or miss with them? Or what was there anything particular about this that made you miss it?
Yeah. So the Bachman books I was kind of hit and miss on because they were a little before my time.
Okay.
And I haven't checked this out exclusively, but there was some transition in Stephen King's writing style where if you look at his earlier books, like Carrie and Cujo and The Long Walk, where, I mean, and for a horror movie, and a horror book, rather, they're truly horrific, and they don't end well.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at his books in the early 80s and going on, they usually, there's an upswing in the ending.
Mm. Mm.
So it's not always completely positive, okay. Not completely redemptive or anything, but you look at It, most of the kids survive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is pre all that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look at The Shining, Danny survives.
Okay.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You didn't want any of those uplifting endings. You wanted the bleak ones, huh?
No. This should be right up your alley.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like the downer endings. So, James, any history with this one?
No, not at all.
Okay. Yeah. Me neither.
I have a question for Colin, though.
Sure.
At the time, did you know that Bachman was Stephen King?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Yes.
So
at what point did society, people, find out that this was King, I suppose.
There's the
or do you have any idea of the history behind
a little
Bachman
bit just from
King?
Listening to the audiobook for The Running Man.
Okay.
Because there was a foreword by Stephen King talking about when Bachman was outed.
Right.
Okay. And you know, he felt like Bachman was a title that he could try different stuff under. Right. And,
right.
And so then he felt like, well, Bachman's now been killed. And then it occurred to him that, you know what? No, I can still write under that name.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know too much about it I'm curious kind of how that got out. Cause you could see it like today, right? Things would probably come out. Somebody would find out and spoil it for everybody else.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how they rolled it on for the movie poster. It was like Stephen King, a Bachman novel.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Long Walk. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had we done something Bachman? I don't think so. Now I think about it. We haven't done Bachman work before, but King work before.
Yeah, yeah. Firestarter was a Bachman book, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
No.
King. No.
Okay. The Running Man, though.
Oh, okay.
Running Man.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, right. Another depressing ending. Yes.
Yes.
Right, right.
See, so he reserved the up ending for King and the depressing endings for Bachman.
Oh, is that what it was? At the end of Carrie, though.
Carrie's a hero.
Have you read the book?
No.
She dies.
Damn it.
I'm sorry.
Oh, she
it's
goes
been 50 years. She all the spoils.
She goes full Samson at the end.
No, she gets shot in the neck by her mom.
Oh. Wow.
And then ends up bleeding out and is able to do one last thing that's sort of redemptive to take care of what had happened. And look at Cujo.
Right.
Right? In Cujo, the little boy, Bradley or D. Williams, who was played by D. Williams' son for the movie, he dies.
Right.
So everything, a lot of them were all down.
This is the episode in which Colin spoils a lot of Stephen King books.
It's from the 70s. Like I said, y'all have had 50 years. Get with it.
Yeah. So then what was he experimenting with? Rhetorical question. Don't need to answer.
Well, this would have been one of his earliest books, though. Maybe his first book.
Well, so maybe correct me if I'm wrong. I'd kind of always understood that the Bachman books, one of the reasons for having an alter ego was so that he didn't dilute his own market. By having so many Stephen King books out and competing against each other.
Oh, that could have been.
Or like diluting his name somehow. I had understood that the publishers were like, no, let's hold off. You know, and he was so prolific that that was just a tactic.
Well, and I mean, like it's still fairly prolific for a man in his 70s.
Right. Yeah. So anyhow, what is The Long Walk about, since it's currently in theaters? And, you know, everybody... We're going to spoil it.
I mean, kind of the title, spot on.
It is.
So this is an alternate Earth. This is not our Earth. It's a completely different world.
Alternate history.
And you wanted me to pull some quotes out to demonstrate that. And so I did.
I did. But I want to talk about that because it doesn't front load that, right? It essentially treats it like any other science fiction where it's like, this is a slightly different future, 15 minutes in the future, you know, kind of thing like Black Mirror or something. Where this one just sprinkles in these little tidbits every now and then that make you go, huh. I don't remember that happening. Tell us about some of those.
Yeah, so the New Hampshire Provo governor, a man known for having stormed the German nuclear base in Santiago, which is in South America, Chile, in 1953. Yeah. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. The German air blitz of the East Coast during the last days of World War II.
Yep.
And then just kind of a status thing about the country. It's they had the National Guard and 16 federal squads to augment the state police.
Hmm.
So there's an additional federal level, you know.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Militarized National Guard to augment ICE.
Yeah,
assist with things.
What a weird far future fantasy thing.
Would never happen in our world.
Yeah, that come and pull you out of your house and whisk you away.
Right, because you know that's Ray Garrity's backstory. Mm-hmm. His dad was a no good drunkard who couldn't hold 2 cents together and keep his political opinions to himself.
Yeah. Yep.
And so one day the squad showed up and pulled him out of his house and they never saw him again.
Yeah. Yeah.
The squad.
There's also a couple of little tidbits that it mentions, like back when they were millionaires or something.
Right.
And
today we'd be like back when they were billionaires.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Inflation.
And then another one was just mentioning like listening to subversive music and it just like listed jazz.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, oh, is that like Swing Kids, you know, where they were the kids listening to swing music in Nazi Germany that was considered subversive because it was lots of Jews and black people that were making that music.
Right.
I thought of it more as like the counterculture of the 20s where jazz and liquor. Right? Mm. That was the bad thing back then.
Yeah. So. Speakeasy kind of stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Although it must have been a little more liberal world because one of the walkers runs over to the side of the road
and starts dry humping somebody.
And starts dry humping some girl who's there with her legs inviting him. And I'm like,
ready to go.
And then he gets shot because he can't walk anymore because he gets blue balls.
That's true. Sure. Death by blue balls.
Yep.
So it can't be that liberal. I mean, because you were mentioning the alcohol and everything.
So there's the liberal part of it, but then there's the I'm going to do whatever the hell I want because I'm on the long walk and I'm probably going to die anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I think that's what clicks in the head versus being more liberal society, so to speak.
One of the things that I really like about the book is just the fact that the world building is really subtle in terms of what is different here. Because anytime you have something like this, Hunger Games, the lottery, the ones who walk away from Omelas, you know, you're like, how did a society get to the point where this thing happens? And I like the fact that he does not care to tell you that.
No.
He's allowing you to infer, you know, draw inference from the fact that, hey, here's a place where we're going to send 100 of our boys and only one of them is going to survive. And you said it was written in the mid to late 60s, right? And so this is probably him thinking about Vietnam and the fact mm-hmm. that we're sending our boys over there. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was very much on my mind is, you know, what would, why would we want to, you know, to send some of our youth to be killed, knowing that that's what's happening. And now you can draw a straight line from that to school shootings and that kind of stuff, right?
That was my thought for the book. And it was even more reinforced by the movie.
Which one?
School shootings? The Vietnam yeah. metaphor. Because yeah. the movie to me was very much a Vietnam War movie.
Okay.
Minus being in Vietnam. there was lots of like, not to jump ahead to the movie, but I'm going to anyway.
Okay.
Like there was parts in the movie where they would pan out and they're just marching along a trail.
Yeah.
And classic rock kicked in. Mm-hmm. Like stuff you'd hear during the Army era. And it looked just like it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, them marching through the jungle in sure. Vietnam.
Yeah. Throw some credence on, right?
Yep.
No, that was My Eyes Are Getting Heavy.
Right.
By, I didn't write down the artist. But I think that's a direct nod to Stephen King mm-hmm. because he owned a radio station in Bangor, Maine
mm-hmm.
that had music Even like better. That playing all
yeah.
along.
Yeah. yeah.
It was
And
totally
the
cool.
drudgery, the. But also the camaraderie that comes out of that, that's yeah. very like brotherhood of the military thing. Band of Brothers, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, right. you would know that too. I mean,
being
aboard ship with a bunch of guys.
Well, and the time in the movie, I mean, those cars did not look like they were modern cars. They looked like 50s, 60s era
cars.
Well,
I think the timing in the movie was like 70s.
Okay. Let's come back to that.
Yeah, it looks like it. But
okay, so back to the book.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, essentially the premise is, right, that there is a Running Man sort of thing that happens, right? Where mm-hmm. it's a competition. You go out there, you sign up for it. And if you're selected, then you're one of 100 that are going on this long walk, and it's walk at a particular pace. In the book, it's 4 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Until nobody's left. Until one person's left.
Right.
And if you get warnings, if you slow down, mm-hmm. And if you get 3 warnings, then the next time you get your ticket, as they say it. And in the book, you don't know exactly what it is, but if you've seen the trailer for the movie, you know. It's you get your brains blown
out. You learn pretty quick what that means.
Well, and there's 2 minutes between the warnings. So it's a slow-ish kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was a little faster in the movie, but yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah,
it was 20 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
I do remember the book had me wondering, like, what state is that last person who survives going to even be in when they survive? And like, is it worth actually surviving this?
Yeah.
To be there?
That's an excellent question. We should come back to.
This is good. This is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the other, another thing to point out would be that we're not talking about adults doing this. These are all kids.
Right.
And you
right.
have to apply to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you win, they give you unlimited amounts
of
money.
Did they have an age limit in the book? I don't remember.
I don't remember it saying.
I
always thought of them as young men just because I always thought of them as 18 to 25.
I was thinking about it like, military age.
But you thought younger.
Draft age or something.
I would have said 15 to 20. Okay. 20 on the outside, 18.
I mean, everybody was surprised that Scram was married, right?
Right. Because he was so young, yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember there was one, I can't remember the name of the kid, but he was getting crap for being too young, or at least he looked too young. Like
in the movie?
In the movie, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, the Jojo Rabbit kid.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows what the age is? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
But in any case, you do sign up for it. And if you get selected, then you go. And
So you're accompanied by these, military vehicles and that are, and people carrying carbine rifles.
Mm-hmm.
And like they said, if you run off the road, they shoot you dead.
Mm-hmm.
If you attack or approach the men, they shoot you dead. And mm-hmm. if you stand still and don't keep the pace up for too long, they shoot you dead. No questions asked.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And then, all the food and drink that you can drink to your benefit or penalty.
Mm-hmm.
All the drink, not the food, right? You only got the food belts every.
Oh, like, that's right. Because Garrity was giving him his.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which that would suck to be allergic to the food you're given.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or some sort of intolerance, right?
Can't eat spam. Mm-hmm.
Like, this gives me diarrhea. Oh, shit. Literally.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. because we joke, right? You say he shat himself to death.
Yeah.
But I mean, that happened.
Yeah, that happens. It's called cholera.
Right.
Yeah. No, but in this case, he couldn't keep walking because he had like serial diarrhea and they shot him dead.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, which in the movie, gosh, that was like, oh, this is hard to watch.
It was. So it's funny because when you break it down, you look at the premise of this book, I'm like, this is a short story, right? This is an Omelas kind of story.
In
right?
a way,
like,
yeah.
Like, how do you extend this to a novel? And I kept thinking, okay, well, this is going to splinter off and give everybody's backstory and give, flashbacks about how they ended up on the walk. Nope, does not do that. Occasional little tidbits.
Right. Yeah, like enough to know about where McVries is coming from and to know Garrity's backstory. But I think interestingly enough, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, the motivation for no individual walker being on that walk, aside from the money, is really detailed.
Right.
No, yeah.
And that's something that we should bring up when we talk about the movie later.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And remember, back to Seth and I were reading this while we were walking, right?
Yeah.
And we kept about the same pace, I would say, the whole time. He was maybe a couple chapters ahead of me at one point.
Yeah.
But we kept like brainstorming like where this was going to go for the exact same reason you just said. Mm-hmm. It was like, there's not much to this as from a premise perspective. So where are they going to go with this novel? And I remember we were talking about, oh, they're going to go into detail.
Yeah.
And this backstory and that backstory. And like, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But then it never happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really admire the how readable it is and how compelling it is, despite the fact that it's basically just a story of people walking in an almost straight line.
Right.
Occasionally going up or around a corner. But
it did not feel like this was a slog at all for that.
No.
Right?
No, so, not at all.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's, I guess we didn't really talk about overall thoughts, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was terrific. So.
Yeah. No, yeah. Apropos to our situation at the time, too.
I'm sorry.
Colin's approach to go ahead.
So, yeah, I mentioned, right, it's not the greatest ending, and we haven't talked about the ending to the book yet.
Okay.
And we'll need to talk about the ending to the book, because the ending to the movie is different.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'd really talk exactly why. I mean, there are some things that are generally mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I have some thoughts about that.
So. Yeah, it's a really compelling story. Mm-hmm. It draws you in, and you know, you're there kind of walking along with them and experiencing things with them. And you know, you get drawn into the camaraderie of the musketeers, all four of them.
Yeah.
Band of brothers, man.
Yeah. And so, I was, when they decide to dissolve the brotherhood at the end, I was so disappointed. It's like, you've supported yourself so long. Anyway, I was obviously caught up in the book, because a lot of things affected me in ways, right?
Yeah. Are you saying you didn't enjoy it, or just your assessment of a book tends to be different than mine based on like how it makes you feel?
Right. So given the era and given how King was writing at this time, I should not have expected a happy, positive ending.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, I mean, should we go there, or do you want to talk about things in the middle first?
Let's talk about things in the middle. So okay. We'll
come back to the end.
But so you think it's a quality book?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. It is a bit of a downer though. So, and we'll get there, but some of the quotes, that in here about it, this is the first one I sent out to the group. I think,
WhatsApp thread.
WhatsApp thread. Yeah. And
group chat.
At some point,
Cotswold Crew 25.
Yeah. Yeah. and so, you know, obviously the main thing on their minds is that they're getting tired. Right. And that's, at some point, that's kind of all they can think about. Right. And so that's where the musketeers come in, and they distract each other and like, hey, tell me a story, you know, and that kind of stuff. But at some point, Garrity's, I think it's during the night at some point, and he says, the pavement fascinated him. How good and easy it would be to sit on that pavement. You'd start by squatting, and your stiff knee joints would pop like toy air pistols. Then you'd put bracing hands back on the cool, pebbled surface and snuggle your buttocks down. You'd feel the screaming pressure of your 160 pounds leave your feet. And then to lie down, just fall backward and lie there, spread-eagled, feeling your tired spine stretch, looking up at the encircling trees and the majestic wheel of the stars, not hearing the warnings, just watching the sky and waiting. And there were so many times during the Cotswold Way walk where I'm just like, I just like to lay down. And so like that, especially, I think I sent that one out after like a day that we thought it was going to be like 15 miles, ended up being more like 18 to 19.
Wow. Right.
And we got in really late. Like, we didn't get to dinner until like almost 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So that was just sort of a miserable day.
When do you remember being 160 pounds, Seth?
junior high? Maybe freshman year of high school.
And it replaced pavement with mud.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just add an extra 100 to that, and,
right.
And they're a little more accurate for me.
Well, and the fact that when you think about walking that far for that long, you think about your feet and your knees. Maybe you start to think about your hips. But do you think about the compression weight on your spine?
Oh, yeah.
From being upright?
That's where it got me, was my back and my feet. were probably where mm-hmm. I felt everything the most.
Wow.
I've still got numb toes. I'm waiting for them. Evidently it's a common thing. Googled it. Sometimes just the pressure, like from going down hills and stuff,
right.
You end up kind of irritating the nerves and your toes go a little numb. Crazy. And it can take months to resolve. So,
and then oddly enough, towards the end where my feet were the most exhausted, it was better for me to actually walk faster.
Oh yeah. He found turbo boost mode on day 7. More. all of a sudden James leading the pack from like day 8, 9 and 10.
Wow.
The rest of the time I'd be like, oh, I'll drop back and talk to James for a while.
Slow James died on that ridge.
He sure did.
And from the ashes, like the phoenix, rose Quick James.
Yes. Quick James.
And Screw Quick James that guy. Is an asshole.
Yeah, yes.
According to Seth.
What? You got like McGreeze and Garrity toward the end where they were sniping at each other?
No, not
that bad.
He
turned into McGreeze.
He just didn't hang out with me anymore. I liked being back in the sweeps with him.
The van.
But yeah, at some point I said to Emily, I'm like, I mean, I'm happy for him, but f*** that guy. there's tons of stuff like that where it talks about, like, at some point it says like he felt like both his feet had migraines.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yep. And I'm like, yep, I understand that. And you know, Garrity's shoes like fall apart at some point and he's walking in his socks.
Yeah,
he chucks them. Yeah.
Well, you'd have to. Yeah. I also like this thing, and I'm curious, this is a very young man thought, right? Where he's starting to think about, I'm not going to make it, right? I'm not going to be the last one. And he says, it didn't scare him the way he thought it would. There was still the unshakable blind assurances that this organism, Ray Garrity, could not die. The others could die. They were extras in the movie of his life, but not Ray Garrity, star of that long-running hit film, The Ray Garrity Story. And that's very like the way young people think.
Right. Yeah. Right? Totally. We're invincible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to admit, yeah, I kind of think that too sometimes. I'm like, yeah, yeah. I'd be fine. Yeah. You know?
So this brings me to my question for us. Poll question.
Okay.
Who did you think was going to survive?
I assumed Ray would, just because he was the...
Who did you want? No. Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
Colin?
Oh, I thought Garrity would survive. He's the point of view character the whole time.
Yeah, I know. And I had the same answer too, which is unfortunate because I didn't... So I'm conflicted on this because throughout the reading the book, this was before the movie.
Okay.
Keep in mind.
Sure, sure.
Throughout reading the book, I actually thought McGree should be the one that would survive.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting.
Why is that?
Because of his energy, and I feel like he was the leader of the whole thing.
Think of the number of times he saved Garrity's ass. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
True. And who was the guy? Barkovich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like... McGreeze is probably the most selfless one, leader, has leadership qualities, has the energy, and he was going up until the end. Nonstop, no bitching, just taking it down.
He had an interesting philosophy too, right? Because he was talking with Ray.
He had the mental game too.
Yeah.
McGreeze did. And so part of me was like, this is the guy that should win, right? But with you, agreeing with you guys, Garrity was the main protagonist, and like, King's not going to kill off the main protagonist, right? It's going to be that way. And so when it changed for the movie, I wonder.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I wonder if this was, and I don't know how involved King was with the movie at all.
So
yeah, let's
come back to
that.
Yeah. Because you know me, right? I'm looking for canonicity.
Yeah.
And so when large plot changes happen, I want to know what has been said. And this plot change was so significant.
Right.
People have been writing about it since the movie's been released. And so I have a few things to share when we get to that point.
Sweet.
All right.
McVries kind of had that thing where he said, you know, I know myself, Garrity. There's going to come a point where I'm just going to be okay with sitting down and taking my ticket.
Right.
And so then that happens right at the end. He's like, yep, this is the time, buddy.
This is it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just goes like a lamb, right? Like a sheep. And of course, they all thought that. Well, let's talk about Barkovich. You know, kind of a big jerk.
Yeah. So Barkovich makes himself stand out right at the very beginning by goading somebody into getting shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he goads him into trying to pick a fight with him, which is against the rules.
Yep.
And and so then the rest of the time, McFreeze is just on him, calling him
killer,
yeah.
Murderer.
Mm-hmm. And Barkovich, you know, toward the end, tries to make nice.
But... I mean, in his defense, that kid had a dumb name.
Barkovich?
No, not Barkovich. The dude who was teasing, but I'm forgetting.
I can't remember what the name was.
It was Frank in the movie.
No. It was, now I gotta look it up.
We have the technology.
Okay.
Yep. It's a nice place to record a podcast, boys.
Frank.
This is wonderful. I mean, aside from the old random birds and airplanes and spray, pretty cool. Yeah.
And my squeaky chair, dang it.
Squeaky. We should get you some spray lube.
Okay, so.
Rank.
Rank was the name.
Rank. Right. Oh, I thought it was Frank.
No, Rank.
Just Rank.
Yeah, like, you smell Rank.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember reading that. I'm like, who names their kid this?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, what else? I mean, we should talk about the Major. We talked about the squads, right? And is there an implication that the Major is anything but sort of the head of this particular thing? Or is he further up in the government? Or is there a government? Who knows?
I feel like he's the head of this, of the walk in particular, right?
Okay.
Or long walk.
I mean, it's essentially like a military unit. These guys are all his guys, right, and one of them makes it.
Yeah. I would say majors in particular are pretty, I mean, it's a high up rank, right?
Yeah.
Next thing, the general, and they're usually pretty.
Mm. There's colonels in between.
Yeah. Major, colonel, yeah.
Maybe he's a major general.
Could be.
Then he's only two away from general.
I had assumed there had been a military takeover of the country.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the major was now, you know, the autocrat.
Right. Is he the generalissimo is basically what I'm going for.
Yeah.
Right.
But then, why he'd call himself the major instead of the general, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, being a major, he's probably in charge of that, I would say, like the northeast region of the country.
Yeah. Could be.
Right. Yeah.
The regional majors.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
managers, majors.
Yes.
Sounds better.
Assistant to the regional major.
And Stebbins. Stebbins is an interesting character.
Yeah. Stebbins and Scram. Because you have Scram, who's maybe slightly older, but also about their age, but married already. And his wife's pregnant, right?
Yeah.
And he just seems like he's a machine, but then he gets sick. Weirdos who get sick.
Yeah. It reminded me of Parks and Rec. Literally.
Oh, yes.
Where he's stop like, pooping.
He's a fine-tuned machine.
Right.
He's
I'm
a machine,
I'm
but like right. one yeah. sand, like one pebble or grain of sand.
The microchip has been compromised. Yes. the flu episode of Parks and Rec is probably the best episode.
Exactly.
Yeah. Stebbins is also kind of a machine, right? Where people are just like, that guy's not going to stop.
No, he's the rabbit.
Well, and he drops these lines very quietly throughout the book. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like you will, Garrity or McReese will hear somebody say something and turn around, and Stebbins is not looking at them, not paying any attention to them, but there was no one else there who could have said it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, later on we learn that he is the major's bastard son.
I wasn't sure if I was supposed to believe that.
I saw no reason not to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Could you intimidate somebody that way? Because there was quite a bit of head game going on.
I mean, it could be, you know, that's just what his mother told him, right? Or something.
Yeah.
It would be a pretty good story to lend him some legitimacy in a tit-for-tat kind of conversation.
Yeah.
Sure.
So who were the ones, there were the two native guys that were evidently brothers. Way out front.
Joe and something.
Yeah. And at some point, Scram teams up with one of them and they go back and attack the the soldiers.
Right.
And then is it them or somebody else who goes and attacks and takes a gun and he's kind of expecting everybody else to rise up with him and they don't.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was kind of the moment where they all failed to fall together instead of fall separately, right?
Right. Yeah. There was multiple points throughout the walk where that happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like McGreeves tried to organize the raspberries. That didn't happen.
Yes. The 47 raspberry salute or whatever it was. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. It was a nice idea.
I think over that point, everybody's just too tired.
I think that was the thing about the attack, because it happened toward the end when I think there were less than a dozen walkers left.
Yeah.
And then one of them jumps up and has managed to shoot one of the soldiers.
Right.
If the rest of them had helped him, maybe something would have happened.
Yeah.
Although there's still the entire rest of the
exactly they're still all in APCs and they got their carbines and there's no way they would not have been able to
because even when like one of the guys gets his weapon taken away and then immediately he's got another one they're ready for that
when they were back 100 strong probably Yeah. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the gumption or the willpower back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, right, about totalitarianism and oligarchy and plutocracies, right, where you can get people to chase the carrot and not realize that maybe they shouldn't chase that carrot. They should just, you know, eat the rich.
Yeah. Don't worry about the carrot.
Break the stick.
Go for the stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That immigrant wants your cookie, says the guy who's standing there with a plate of cookies piled up to his shoulders.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the toward the end, and then we can move into talking about the. Or do we want to? Let's save talking about the end of the book until we talk about the end of the movie. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the movie was directed by Francis Lawrence. Screenplay was by J.T. Molnar, and then starring Cooper Hoffman as Ray Garrity and David Johnson as Peter McFreeze. There's other folks as well. The kid from Jojo Rabbit was in it. He was the one that looked too young. I didn't look up the rest of the names. Obviously, Mark Hamill was the major.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Garrity's mom. I recognized her name. I just recognized her from, I think, Arrested Development.
Yes.
Yeah. I gotta know. She's hilarious. Judy Greer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cooper Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman's son.
I don't know. Really?
You didn't know that.
There was a mention in one of the articles about, when they were talking to him in particular, about how he was able to bring the loss of his father into acting Ray Garrity.
Yeah.
You know, because that's something those two characters share. So I didn't realize he was Philip Seymour Hoffman's son.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he doesn't super look like him, though like the body type kind of matches.
Yeah, you know.
He doesn't look like he's 160 pounds.
No.
He shaped kind of the way I was in high school, so.
Yeah, big and not chunky might be the right way. Might, not,
husky, not right?
Badly overweight or anything,
yeah.
But.
Right. Yeah. No, I was like 195 pounds and, you know, I had a little bit of a punch on me, but I was strong. That was by the time I graduated. When I started, I was, you know,
5'3". Boot camp might have fixed you.
Right? Yeah.
I was like 190 in high school. Mm-hmm. No, when I graduated boot camp, I was 168.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that probably would have helped.
Ridiculous. I was overweight through most of high school, and then I lost down to 155.
Wow.
So, you know, Francis Lawrence is known for directing The Hunger Games, the trilogy.
Yep.
Constantine and I Am Legend.
Constantine is an underrated movie.
It's adapted.
Yeah, yeah.
True.
You like those comics, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I enjoy those comics.
All right. We'll add that to the list for potential.
Although right now we're booked through 2025.
I know. So. Yeah. We are. So
unless we change the pace.
So
yeah. We can go to 4 miles an hour instead of three.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so that's a thing to mention is King has kind of acknowledged four miles per hour is too much.
Yeah.
Where three is a 20-minute mile, you know, yeah.
He was cool with it lowering the three for the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I came across some interesting trivia on IMDb for this movie.
Okay. Cool.
And one of them was that there was a special screening they held for this movie where people walked on a treadmill set at 3 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And if they fell below, they got kicked out of the movie.
That's awesome.
But there was all this more stuff between like Mark Hamill and the cast. Like in particular, he wanted like in the early in the early beginnings of he was so well known. I mean, he's Luke Skywalker for us,
right?
And all these kids are in the movie, and they're like, "He's Luke Skywalker. I want to, you know, go meet him or whatever." Yeah. But in particular, the guy who played Garrity didn't want to meet Mark Hamill right away.
Mm.
He resisted his urge because it's Luke Skywalker,
right?
Well, and because he did not want to start to like him,
yeah.
Because
he didn't want to start to like him because he was afraid of
it's kind of method
his acting ability in the movie because more so than the book in the movie they're not polar opposites, but
no, they are polar opposites.
I guess they're polar opposites.
So,
yeah.
I mentioned earlier in the book, it's never clear why any of them are doing this.
Right.
Yeah.
It's almost like, why would you buy a lottery ticket? You know, you're throwing away a dollar, but you're throwing away your life.
Right? Yeah.
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 And in the Hunger Games, you are chosen. It's not a choice. You have to go.
Right.
But this is opt-in.
Yep.
Although there's some discussion about that as well, whether it's truly opt-in or not.
I really liked that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So in the movie, Ray Garrity's dad not only gets squatted, but they drag him out in front of his family and the major demands that he pledge allegiance to him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he doesn't, he shoots him in front of his family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Garrity does this walk and he wants to win. And when you win, you get two things. You not only get unimaginable amounts of money, you get a wish.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's going to wish for a carbine.
A carbine.
And then he's going to shoot the major.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And this is revealed later in the movie between him and Peter McVries. And this is where I think what you talked about, James, about McVries really having the leadership quality, right? Based on what happened to McVries in his early life, he was there to find positive things in the world.
Yeah.
And he wants to win the walk so that he can, his wish would be that there could be two winners, not just one.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And, McVries says, you can't do that. If you kill somebody, it will change who you are. It will affect you, your family, your, you know, your mother.
Yeah. And it's not going to make a difference.
And it's not going to make a difference.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And so don't do it. Don't do it, Ray.
Yeah.
And Garrity pushes him away because he's set on doing it.
Yeah.
And then you get down. Anyway, let's keep going.
Yeah. So the movie kind of lives or dies on like the Musketeers, right?
Yeah.
And they're really good. And so I thought the casting was great. I'd never seen Cooper Hoffman in anything before.
The casting was brilliant.
It was fantastic.
I like the dude who played McVries was also in Alien.
Alien Romulus. Yeah.
Thank you.
He was awesome.
He was great.
He was so good. Yeah.
It's good to see him again.
Yeah. I was glad to see him again. And he's super charming. And like he kind of exudes that. He's kind of always got a smirk on his face.
Yeah.
He's kind of upbeat. And I liked that perspective of, you know, you got to think about doing something positive. And yeah, I really liked the kind of building friendship between those two, which was really neat. And so there's something about things with downer endings to me that I often find very sweet. And we talked about this when we talked about On the Beach.
Oh.
Where you had the relationship between the woman who's supposed to be comforting the captain, and how he kind of ends up comforting her and just being a friend to her.
Yeah.
And I just found that very moving, and just kind of in how people face, you know, the extremity. And here there's some of that as well. And I felt it more in the movie. And I think it's just because the actors were so charming.
They were charming. Two, you can get more out of a visual performance than I think than you can out of a book, right? In a book, there's a lot of individual interpretation, but when you see McVries and Garrity encouraging one another and saving one another,
holding each other up,
all the way up to the end, that's really moving.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think Stephen King does well is he tends to write great buddy stories.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about The Losers Club from It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stand By Me.
Yeah, Stand By Me. Stand you think about me. The group of people in The Stand.
Yeah.
Who helped themselves in Shawshank.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I don't remember if that's as strong in Shawshank as it is in the movie.
Oh, okay.
So what I'm thinking is that he lays this great groundwork. Then people then come and like dial that up to 11 and make incredible stories like the one in The Long Walk toward the end.
Yeah.
Right? So in the Long Walk, the book, the Musketeers dissolve because they know that if they keep helping each other, they're all going to continue to suffer. And so from here on out, we're not helping one another.
Yeah.
And that broke my heart. That was hard.
Yeah. What was I thinking of with that? I mean, it reminded me of like, if you've ever watched Survivor, you always have alliances that go to a certain point and they're like, hey, final three? Yeah. Okay. But all bets are off at final three, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And really they're all bets are off immediately.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I can say it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, like, nah.
Yeah.
And so I like that better in the movie than I do the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Musketeers never end.
Mm-hmm.
The Fellowship never ends. The Musketeers do eventually end.
Yeah, yeah. And this is one thing I'll say about the movie is, obviously, this book is longer than the Stephen King maxim for adaptation, right? It's twice as long, you know, two and a half times as long as it should be, right? And so what are you going to do to
page-wise,
to make this work?
Content-wise.
Not content-wise, yeah. And crucially, I think that's really important because you don't notice the trimming quite so much because the movie's able to do more with the character development just from the actors. But the one thing that it does that's obvious is cut the number in half from 100 to 50, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, and it changes the pace.
Yeah.
And all the warnings get really shorter. So then you know, the tension gets really high.
Yeah. And everything happens more quickly, right? And it would have to because you're doing it in a shorter period of time.
Right.
I liked, though, that they kept Garrity's number, right?
47.
Yeah. And I really like something you mentioned earlier, does anybody ever really volunteer for the Long Walk?
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, does anybody ever really vote in countries where there's 100% turnout? Right. No, nobody's really voting. Maybe they think they are, but they're not. Because there's no such thing as 100% turnout in a democracy.
Right.
But in North Korea, sure, they get 100% turnout because the state votes for you.
I don't think
you.
North Korea ever actually claimed to do that.
But. Yeah, I don't know. But.
I want to say that the voting percentage in Australia is extremely high.
Okay, well, good for the Australians. Good for them. So.
To the movie.
To the movie.
You were mentioning like, the actors, charisma, et cetera.
Yeah.
The guy, the Asian kid who played Olsen.
Uh-huh.
I thought he was fantastic.
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
Probably one of the best, not the best, but one of the, I like McGreevy's better, but I think he did a great job at showing how
the fatigue
yeah. that walk would be. Like,
yeah.
Seeing him doing it at the end
he
was like,
wrecked.
This is yeah. believable. He did a fantastic job, yeah. I think.
And Stebbins was great at looking sick.
Yeah.
The guy that played Garrity, but McVries, he almost looks like he's taking a summer.
He looked cool as a I know. Yeah, he was insane. Cruising.
He yeah. looked cool as a cucumber the whole time.
yeah.
yeah.
But like all the, I want to say all the performances in this movie were fantastic.
It's great, yeah.
I don't think there was a bad one.
No. And so, yeah. crucially, I watched a couple behind-the-scenes things on this. They shot this in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt like it's important because yeah, we need right. to show the wear on them.
And they actually did a lot of walking.
And they did a lot of walking. And like they were talking about, like, you know, the first day we did like 9 miles. I'm like, I know how that yeah. feels. You
and
know?
I love the way they shot it, too. It doesn't. Yeah. At first, I thought it was going to be kind of like the action cammy thing. Where it just like yeah. looks terrible, like I don't know, parts of Jason Bourne. Shaking cam, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. And like
well, or even if you had big drone shots or anything, it would right. cheapen it somehow. Because there was a lot yeah. of handheld stuff and there was a lot of just mm-hmm. you know, on the back of a truck kind of yep. thing and just right in the people's faces.
Yeah.
And you know, the movie was shot for $20 million.
Yeah. Well, not a lot of special effects.
Right.
Not
right.
a lot of
the
huge
gunshot
names.
Wounds.
Yeah.
That there was one CGI thing. Where a gunshot was like very graphic right in the middle.
Yeah.
And I love how you do that once.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the Tom Cruise thing from A Few Good Men. You say it once to get it on the record. And then after that, you don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
everyone
yeah.
will fill in all the details by themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So just wonderfully
yeah, when
done.
That dude's like, it was like the lower jaw just kind of fell out.
Yeah. yeah. That was the young kid, right?
Damn.
The Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah. The little things like the rotting cow right by yep. the road, which mm-hmm. tells you there's no county services and
right.
the car that was burning and yeah. everything right. else, people, you know, running an old tractor, just staring and watching and staring like, as you walk by. And
stuff was pretty desolate.
Yeah.
Right?
The one thing that the movie has a lot less of than the book is the bystanders, right?
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
The crowds. They just don't happen until like the very end. And then you just have little, you know, mm-hmm. panning shots going by, you know, a cat sitting on top of some mailboxes.
I do like CGI how they cat. Filled that in for the movie where they talked about how the major doesn't like to have the crowds until the end.
Yeah.
But I missed the... So what I really liked the how King wrote it in the book.
Yeah. Here's the dog toy. Hopefully that doesn't make it in.
what I really like about how King wrote it in the book was the crowd was an entity.
Yes.
Like this monstrous entity that just could swallow you up if you didn't resist it.
Right. Well, and the walkers hated them.
I loved that yeah. metaphor. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
It went from being just a... few people making up a crowd to like the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it didn't happen until like, I want to say 2/3 way through the book.
Mm-hmm.
It yeah. transmorgified into,
yeah.
into the crowd. It was mm-hmm. like this nebulous monster that'll just swallow you up.
Because mm-hmm.
it was when they reached 100
yeah.
miles.
Yeah.
Right.
And I thought it, two things. I thought I liked the metaphor of the monster deal, the mm-hmm. crowd, right? But it timed well with you're not thinking straight.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, a whole bunch of people that should be, you know, happy and cheery and crowd and whatever, turn into this, like, thing.
yeah.
I thought it was cool the way it transitioned in the book.
No bathroom breaks, no nap time,
yeah.
right?
And you make your own bathroom
where
breaks.
Is your mind going to be? Yes. yeah. So let's talk about the
I
movie.
Do like how they answered that, though.
there is a lot more graphic crapping in this movie than in most movies.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I like the pee backwards.
Yes.
That was slick. I was wondering how they could do
No, they mentioned that in the book.
yeah, I know.
Somebody did it that way. That's the way I do it. So
yep.
I remember I had a friend that I went over to his house one time and we were just out in his front yard and he just started singing a song saying, I'm cleaning my curb. just urinating on his curb. His mom came screaming out of the house. Christopher, what are you doing?
I'm singing the cleaning my curb song,
yeah.
Mom.
yep. Yeah. I was like, boy, I'm glad I didn't join in. Not that I was really tempted, but
was the curb dirty? Was he doing it?
This was a different Chris than my friend across the street. That was Chris D. We had Chris D and Chris W in my class.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they got some shots of them eating and drinking and getting canteen refills. Yeah. All the things that you might think about for detail were there.
Mm-hmm.
They did a great job adapting this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm bummed it's not doing better in the box office, but, you know, a $20 million movie, it doesn't have to make that much to make its budget back.
Isn't that true? I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes actually before I went and watched the movie. Mm. And all the ratings were great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's not uncommon, right? Yeah. When the ratings are good, but nobody goes to see it. Yeah, right? Like Dread, right?
Or I wonder how Weapons did.
Weapons did pretty well, especially for a modest budget.
Okay.
Is that a toy or? I guess
it's a squeaky toy.
It's a squeaky toy, yeah. And I was like, wow, that is phenomenally irritating.
It's really loud.
It's really loud, yeah.
Well, I mean, they're dog squeeze, right? That's not a.
Well, still.
This is the hazards of recording in my backyard.
Anyway.
But it is perfect here. It's 71 degrees. Brilliant. This is glorious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the end? So the book, it's a little mysterious, right? Because he starts hallucinating or thinking he sees this dark figure ahead.
Right. McVree sits down. So it's just him and Stebbins.
Mm-hmm.
And Stebbins, you know, is this young, strong kid. He's the major's son. He's probably the front runner. Maybe the whole thing's rigged. Mm-hmm. You just don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I almost thought for a second in the book that Stebbins might actually be some sort of automaton. I'm like, that would totally jive with like King, sci-fi, something crazy.
Well, he said he was the plant. I mean, wouldn't it be crazy if you know, when the you're rabbit. About to get shot, Stebbins says, it was all Reed.
I did like the rabbit analog metaphor, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been an interesting Twilight Zone ending.
Totally.
Well, you kind of got the Twilight Zone ending anyway.
Yeah, you do.
So let's talk about the book ending, and you started it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Garrity starts to hallucinate that there's somebody up in front of Stebbins, and he's had it. He is done. And he goes up to Stebbins, and he's going to tell him that he's going to sit down. And when he touches Stebbins' shoulder, Stebbins turns around, and Stebbins has already lost. He sits down.
Yeah, he
gets his ticket punched.
Well, not even better. He just kills over.
That's right.
Well, he just goes like, oh, Garrity. And then...
Yeah, he just kills over dead.
Yeah.
There's nothing to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the people come to tell him that he's winning, but that thing that he hallucinated, he can still see it. It's a dark figure out in the distance.
Yeah. Right. He's like, who didn't I run down?
So he runs to start to catch up to him. Mm-hmm. And so you're thinking about this. He's been walking nonstop for 4 days with minimal sleep, minimal food, no water. He's probably sunburnt, sick, exhausted, and he has no shoes, and he has the strength to start running.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, and that's the way the book ends.
That's the way the book ends. So despite the money, doesn't matter. Your life is essentially
Back to
over.
My earlier comment. Like, what state are these people in?
What is the victory condition here?
Right?
It reminds me of the
Running
Man.
You win, but what exactly do you freaking win?
Last season's winners.
Yeah.
Everything sounds really good because that's the way they're portrayed. Mm-hmm. And in truth.
Right. Because I like one of the... Throughout the book, they do harken back to some of the people that did win.
Yeah.
Like there was one particular instance where like the last two were crawling on their hands and knees, all bloody to hell. And I think one of them just kills over the other guy's wins automatically, right? Because they're in that state. But
one of them started crawling earlier.
Was just mentally scarred and messed up for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you won, but what did you win exactly?
Yeah.
Yeah. All expenses paid trip to the hospital.
Well, yeah, that and like if you've done this thing and you had any kind of camaraderie on it, now you've seen like the people who walked for the rest of their lives with you.
Yeah. Now all your brothers are dead.
Yeah, yeah. So in the movie it really portrays that loss too, right? Where here's where we have the difference. So everybody, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, it's not all that long.
Here we are.
It's less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
It was less than 2 hours.
Yeah, it cranks right along.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At
3 miles per hour.
Yeah, exactly.
At 3 miles per hour.
Yeah. At the end, like we talked about, McVree finally says, it's time, buddy. You know, I'm going to sit down now. And Garrity won't let him.
Right.
And he picks him up and they start walking again and Garrity takes a knee. And so that's completely different. Yeah.
Right. And because the warnings are so short, so in the book, that would not have worked because McVries would have realized in 4 or 6 minutes that Garrity wasn't there anymore. Mm-hmm. But here, it's 10 seconds per warning or 20 seconds per warning, whatever.
Something like that. It was much shorter.
Yeah, and they had already tapped out two of their warnings. And so there wasn't anything else to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I did find in the book and the movie, like when somebody was on their third warning, like, wait, if you turn an ankle, you get a stone in your shoe, anything, right? Anything that happens, you know, you doze a little bit or something and you're done. And it was very, very like edge of your seat whenever that kind of thing would happen.
Yeah.
And you have to walk an hour to shed one of them.
Each warning. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
So in the movie, like you said, McVries wants to sit and Garrity says, no, don't do it. Then Garrity fades in the background, sits down, gets tapped.
Yeah.
And so now McVries has a chance. He's the winner, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stebbins is dead.
He fulfills Garrity's wish.
What does he do?
Yeah.
He takes the carbine. And here's the thing, right? It plays out in tempo so long. I would say that scene took 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Where he's just standing there with the gun and the major's trying to tell him, hey, son, you don't want to do this. Yeah.
Nothing irrevocable has happened yet.
Yeah. And then he shoots him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he puts the gun down and walks away.
So I think part of me thinks that Garrity got to him, though, right? In that, think about the ending, right? Where Garrity, it wasn't quite the ending. Anyway, Garrity tells him about his wish.
Right. I want to
get the carbine. And I want to shoot him in revenge for his dad, basically, right? And then McVries counters that and says that your dad died for nothing because he didn't.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you don't want to do that because you'll just be dying for nothing. It's not going to make any change if you kill the major.
Right.
But Garrity, counterpoint to that, was like, well, it wouldn't make any difference if I killed the major, maybe. But at the point that he wins the long walk, that's different, right? It's different if the winner of the long walk kills the major versus some other schmuck kills the major.
Hmm.
And I think that got to McVries and changed something in his head. Because at that point, he's the one as a winner who kills the major and not just somebody else that kills the major.
But if Garrity had been the winner.
But Garrity wasn't the winner.
Yeah, because Garrity.
No, you're right. That's the thing, right? Garrity was one. So Garrity wanted to kill him as the winner of the long walk, right?
It's the only way to. That's how you get the carbine.
Right, to get the carbine and do the thing.
So, yeah, at some point, McVries is kind of telling Garrity to do something more positive. And I feel like then when Garrity surrenders at the end, he's going, well, my friend is going to do something more positive. And it's better for him to do that than for me to do the thing that I did.
Right.
And then McVries pulls a switcheroo on him. It's like, hey, you know what the most positive thing would be to do? Shoot a Nazi.
Or an autocrat or whoever he is, a dictator.
To be clear, I understand that can come out, especially in the days we're living in right now, as endorsing gun violence, which I'm not endorsing. So just to be clear, assassinating people, generally not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially if they have different political views from you.
It's not a sustainable solution.
Yeah. No.
Most
no,
sometimes.
No.
Yes. So, I'm always looking for the positive uplifting ending.
Yes,
thank you. And to me, that is right. It's Garrity acknowledging he can't keep going. He doesn't want to win because then he would be tempted to do that. Mm-hmm. And he understands it's the wrong thing.
Yeah,
and then
he wants
McVries,
to win for the wrong reasons, right?
Yeah. So for McVries to come around and say, "Okay, I'm going to do the right thing," it's not the right thing. It's still the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And so, it's a huge change from the ending of the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And King was on board with it.
Mm.
And the way it was explained was they didn't like the idea of Garrity winning for vengeance.
Mm.
Right.
So, but that leads me to two places. One is don't give him the vengeance motivation up front.
Sure.
He can go home to his mom.
Mm-hmm.
Give him Jan back to come home to as well.
He didn't have Jan in the movie.
He didn't have Jan in the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then, It's in a way, it's the same kind of downer ending as the book.
Mm-hmm.
McVries compromises his own principles. And then keeps on walking.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure how literal all that should be, because I expected him to die in a hail of bullets right then.
Yeah.
And the fact that nobody shot him, then I was like, is the major more important than we think? And everybody's like, ding dong, the witch is dead?
Yeah.
I guess that has to do with something that is kind of relevant, and it's the bending of the knee.
Mm.
It's you are complying not because you're forced to, but because it's expected to, and it's easier this way.
Yeah.
And once all the pressure is gone, people were free to say, "Oh, you killed him. That's okay."
Yeah. I don't know. It, it, I don't mind the ending. It's something that I've been thinking about. And so, you know, I don't mind some ambiguity. And it doesn't ruin the movie for me. I don't know. You know, you tell me. I think there are certainly going to be people who are like, I hated that ending. Or I hated the fact that it was different than the book.
And they didn't read the book.
Yeah.
Because it was just as ambiguous.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like the book ending was ambiguous enough to leave something to change in the movie. And then, of course, they did. But still, like, him turning around and walking away doesn't really tell you any consequences of him actually killing the major.
And it's like, you know, McVree's compromised his values, right?
Right.
To make something positive of this. And it's hard to feel good about that.
But you don't know that he did, because it could have had a positive outcome.
It could have.
But we don't know.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's a lot like the book in that you don't know. What's going to happen to Garrity? Will he ever get his sanity back?
Right.
McVree's. In the book.
In the book, Garrity. And so it's McVree's. How will McVree's live with himself from this point going forward? Mm-hmm. And will he have a chance to? Because maybe 30 seconds later, everyone wakes up and goes after him.
The difference between Garrity killing him and McVree's killing him is vengeance and avenging him, right?
Right. It's like the end of American Gods. I dedicate this battle to Shadow or whatever his name was.
Oh.
So now McVree's isn't the one. He's not taking vengeance on the Major killing him, right?
He's honoring his friend.
Honoring his friend, I would say executing with probably due cause.
So what I'm not getting, I think maybe I'm half getting it, is Garrity was there because the Major killed his father.
Right.
McVree kills the Major because the Major killed Garrity.
No. Well, the Major, I didn't get that at all, actually.
The Major did personally come over and finish Garrity off.
He did. Yeah.
Was supposed to draw a thematic resonance back to the fact that he executed his father, I think.
Yeah. That I got, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think McVree's killed the Major because he killed Garrity. I think he killed the Major because that's what Garrity wanted. But I think the reason why Garrity told him he wanted to do it changed his mind, because he's a long walker at that point. Right? Yeah. He won the long walk. What can the long walk winner do?
So you think that he thought about his own choice of making two winners over one,
mm-hmm.
and thought about stopping. So here's the question, right?
Sure.
And this talks about the futility of trying to assassinate anyone, right? There's always someone there to slide in and take that person's place.
Mm-hmm.
And all the people around them, they're all still the same. Nothing is really going to change.
Yeah.
The way to make change in our system is through voting that party out of power.
So that's our system though, right? We don't know what the system in the book is.
That is true, right? Yeah. Who knows what the nuclear war
and that's kind of where I'm at. Like, the execution might, I don't know. I don't know if it might do anything or not. But I think that's the experimental part of it, though.
Yeah.
Where Garrity tells him, yeah, I can't just kill him, but maybe as a long walker, when I kill him, maybe that will do something. Hmm. And I think that's something McVree's hadn't thought about when he was saying that you killing him won't change anything. Because that was the counterpoint, right? McVree's tells him, you killing him won't change anything. And Garrity's like, well, as a long walk winner, maybe it will. And I feel like that changed something in Garrity's mind, McVree's mind.
Yeah.
And so when he gets his wish, he gets the carbine, shoots the Major, and then walks away with it.
Yeah. And so.
But we don't know what happens after that. So maybe it didn't change anything. Maybe it does. We don't know. It's just as ambiguous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the nature of the horror movie, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a happy ending.
It leaves the audience to think and wonder and whatever.
Yeah.
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 So.
Nice to have you here, James, you know, with opinions.
Yeah.
Only takes a couple of...
like just a few pints. A
couple beers. All right. Should we wrap up?
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to have a lot of fun editing this.
Yeah, I think so. I saw another write error, but it seems to still be going. So we'll see what happens. But we'll see how many dog squeaks got in here. It's relentless.
Yeah.
All right. Rank them.
Movie, book, but just right there.
I mean,
I'm going to go with book, movie, because I really enjoyed reading it while we were there. But it was a great movie.
Yeah, yeah. I go movie book as well, but I agree with you, James. Like, yeah. Like the I was right to suggest this. It was cool to read it while we were doing The Cotswold Way, because like the feet. Yeah. The foot pain was real,
right?
And it was very relatable when reading this. But yeah, I really enjoyed the movie.
The acting, The cinematography, the direction, fantastic.
The
light touch on the special effects. Mm-hmm. Don't do any more than you need. The bleakness, just it all comes through so well.
Yeah. All right. Next month, The Running Man remake. So we don't necessarily have to do any extra reading. I re-listened to the audiobook, right. But nobody has to. I might re-listen to the podcast just to find out what we talked about last time. But
yeah, I'm probably going to do a fresh reread so everything's in my mind so I can think about it. Because this movie is not, it's supposed to be a blend of the book and the movie.
Yeah.
Well, they'll be taking some elements from both.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean a blend of the book and
a readaptation and remake at the same time?
Yeah. So there's a game show, but it's more like the game show in the book than the game show in the movie.
Right.
So he'll be out among people and they'll be chasing him and he'll be.
Which is like the book.
Which is more like the book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I remember being disappointed by that factor.
All right. Let's wrap up before the recorder dies.
Okay. So.
Yes. All right. We'll talk to everybody next month. Let us know what you thought of this book. And until next time, may the road rise up to meet you, in this case. May you not get your ticket when it does. And may the book always fall open to where you left off. Bye, everybody.
You know, we missed a golden opportunity, Seth.
What's that?
That thing runs off of batteries.
It does run out of batteries, yeah.
I think we should have done this on the move.
Just gone out for a walk?
Yes.
Yeah.
We could have done laps.
Oh, that would have been rad.
Yeah.
I was telling Colin.
He's sick. We've got an under desk triathlon.
Trampoline.
A treadmill, Seth?
Treadmill. A treadmill is what I'm going for, not a tramp or a trampoline. But yeah, you can set it to 3 miles an hour. I tried it earlier. It's too fast.
3 miles an hour is a good
clip. It's a good clip.
Yeah.
So it's 4 miles an hour.
Right.
We used to run faster than 3 miles an hour.
Barely. Did we, though? Did we?
We did.
Barely.
Yeah, we did. Briefly, James and I went and did the Cotswold Way with our wives in England.
What is the Cotswold Way, Seth?
It's a path from Chipping Camden to Bath.
So it's an afternoon walk?
More or less, yes.
It's a stroll through the garden.
It's 102. About the garden. The great part is, in Chipping Camden, there's a stone that points the way, and it says 102M, because it was written before the metric system. Oh. So you didn't need a different designator for mile and meter.
Okay.
It is not 102 meters.
No, it is not.
That would have been way easier.
Yeah.
So it's 102 miles, and you guys averaged 4 miles an hour, so it took you 50 hours.
Right.
No, it's less than that even. It's 26 miles or 26 hours. So you must have cranked it out in a day and a half.
Yeah, we thought.
Yeah, it was pretty long. Yeah,
the best thing, we were there for 10 days, but we did the whole walk, obviously, in just a little over a day.
Right.
And all the rest of it, we were just sightseeing.
Yes.
Exactly.
No, generally what would happen is we'd start off in the morning and we'd have a couple of hours. We'd have a nice English breakfast, and then we'd get on the trail and everything was pretty cool until it would randomly rain on us for a little bit, and then we would continue on, and then our feet would hurt for the next, 5 to 6 hours, and then we'd arrive.
Oh, wow. So in a way, you walked right along with Garrity and
very much.
And Stebbins and...
Yep. Yes, yeah, very very much. A lot of the descriptions of the conditions of their feet were very relatable to us.
Very accurate.
I mean, is like to the where you were like having holes in your socks and shoes and blood and pus and other things, or just
no, pain? not to that level. Just like where you could easily...
blood and pus.
Extrapolate. There was blood and pus, yes. Everybody got blisters. Wow. So
My blisters got blisters.
Yeah. You could, at some point, he was just walking on pus, yes.
Wow.
No, you could extrapolate from the way we were feeling as middle-aged men doing something that probably would have been better done 15, 20 years ago. But it was a fun experience. And then every evening, if I had the strength to, I read a little bit of the book because lots of times I'm like, it's 8:30, that's bedtime.
I did finish this book before we left England.
Okay, you did better than I did. I finished it on the plane.
I do everything better than you do. So
yeah, that's true.
No surprise.
If I had stayed an extra day in England, I would have finished
there
it.
You go.
So.
And were all secondary goals accomplished? Disc golf was played. Pubs were visited.
Pubs were definitely
pubs
visited.
Pubs were visited.
I brought discs with me, but there was not a course within walking distance, and we wouldn't have walked it if there was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, basically.
And did you meet any other science fiction fans while you were out and about?
Oh, well, we went to a really nerdy store called the Forbidden Planet.
Yes.
In London.
London super mega nerd store. Sweet. It was fantastic.
You didn't run into any of our fans, though.
No.
You ran into any of our guests.
Oh, I see. I see where you're leading me, Colin.
No, yes. I was going to say, we did run into one fan of the podcast.
Yes. Okay. One previous guest of the podcast. Sorry, brain fog. Yeah. We in Broadway. Right. Broadway. We met up with Phil Nichols, mutual friend and Colin's co-host.
Yeah.
So, completed the long-awaited partial meeting of Phil and Take Me to Your Reader, which was supposed to happen last year, but did not work out.
Yeah.
I was able to bring back.
Did you deliver the package?
I did deliver the package. The science
hat
fiction
is incredible.
Science fiction 101 hat.
That's so cool.
Well, a little bummed he didn't have one for me and James, but you know, hey. Yeah, we could rep the podcast.
Fair.
but yeah, that was fun to just sit down and have coffee with him for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And just kind of chat. So
very cool.
Nice guy. And not AI. Just so in case anybody wanted to know, is Phil real? Yes, we have. The two of us will attest to the fact that he is real.
No one has actually said that, right?
No, but I mean, the art that pops up with your podcast, it looks like he might be a robot. So, and we're pretty sure I saw him drink a coffee. So unless he's pulling like a full Stephen Byerly from iRobot, you know.
No, he pulled the bag out of his esophagus later on that day.
Oh, like in humans?
Yeah.
Yes. So. Yeah, it was really nice to meet Phil.
Our next shot should be like Dublin 2029.
Yeah.
Game.
Yeah. If we can get him to come over for it.
He'd have to come up, yeah.
He'd have to come up, yeah. Okay. We weren't all that far from where he was, but...
Dublin's great. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So we were talking about the long walk after we got really badly distracted.
I'll put this someplace else.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about the book. So...